number two and hour number three tonight. We're going to wrap up this remarkable story about Source A, otherwise known as Rich, as brought to us through the courtesy of Clay and Sean Pickering, who have carried this message and this story for a long time. They've been dark for the last almost 8 years, and they have come forward with it once again. As far as Richard is concerned, he will not be coming on this program. He is living in a very solitary, secure position somewhere, out somewhere, and he's apparently happy, so we'll leave that alone. We're getting no contact. I'm getting no contact except from the Pickerings, and they have told a very convoluted, complex story, and I think they've done a very good job with it. Parts of it are completely off the wall and unbelievable. Parts of it are very human. It's a very unusual story, and that's the best thing, I think, the most proper thing that should be said about it. It's extremely unusual, and it's up to you to make your own decisions, of course, and I'm sure that Clay and Sean would agree with that 100%. Clay, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Jeff. I'm right here, brother.
Very, very good. And Sean, are you there?
I, too.
That sounds almost Shakespearean. I, too. I, too. All right. Well, I3, I'm here, too. And somebody else is there as well. Let's see if Robert Morningstar is standing by. Are you there, Robert?
Standing by?
Well, why don't you sit down? Take a load off your feet.
I am sitting down, standing by.
I figured you might be. All right, very good. Robert, have you heard the earlier discussions we've had about this very unusual story?
I heard the very first program, but I was unable to attend the subsequent ones.
Yeah, the second one got out there, Twilight Zone. Very strange.
How far? Tell me.
As far as most people wanted to go, I think.
Yeah, well, we went pretty far. Rich and I and Clay and Sean have lived a historic adventure that turned into a misadventure, and now it's a great adventure again, and I'm very happy to be here. As I've told my brothers, the Pickerings, this is vindication and validation of everything that they and Rich and I and the USN tried to tell the people back in 2008, 2010. But we were thwarted, sabotaged by hackers and debunkers that troll the internet. But I'm very happy that it came about, and I have dug up an article, extended article, that I sent to you in the notice, where I briefed my friend Richard Hoagland. One of the best ways I've found to compose something and inform in an informative way, directed news, you know, is to compose it as if you're writing it to a colleague, a friend, and then turn it into an article. And I did so on UFO Digest, and I gave you the link. If you post it, if people go there, you'll see that there are no pictures, because we have been attacked repeatedly at UFO Digest, and this was one of their favorite targets. They took beautiful compositions that I made of UFOs hovering over the United Nations, which was symbolic and literal at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, they were targeted. Pictures of the attendants, they've been stripped. But the text is there, and I'm very happy to have it before my eyes, and a little later on, I can read you one paragraph which says it all. Look back on the last 9-10 years,
right,
and you'll see that everything we were told has come true.
All right. I haven't gotten that email, so you better resend it.
Ooh, let's see.
To send it again when you get a chance. I'll get
okay,
right
you know
on
what
it.
I can do? I can actually put the link right here in our chat window here through Skype. It's very convenient.
Okay. All right. Let me go back to the brothers Pickering, and start out with Sean. Sean, we're going to spend 2 hours tonight talking, and the first hour will include Robert. We're going to go back to Robert in just a minute. But have you come up with anything critical that has not been covered yet that you'd like to kind of back page a little bit and insert in the narrative? Anything we've missed that's been bothering you? Gosh, we didn't do that. We didn't touch on this.
I don't think we've missed anything, but there are a few things that need to be elucidated. One of which, we're always kind of revisiting the idea that Rich was part of the Navy. He was a Navy officer. And the crux of the accusation that he wasn't is that there's absolutely no DD-214 that he was ever part of the military. That he had family members, such as an ex-wife, said that he was never part of the military. That a particular prosecutor in New Jersey had gone to the FBI and the NCIS and asked. They said that, no, he was never part of the military, because even Richard said he wasn't part of the military when he was brought in. Now, you can look at that as saying that he admitted that he was lying, or you can look at it and it was his way of turning it off, part of failsafe. This
okay.
is where you start getting a little bit into the unknowable.
Mm-hmm.
But what flies directly into that is that he got into Dahlgren. Okay, with ID, unescorted, right. In a classified facility. Clay and I walked onto a facility with him. We have had other... We have an intel person that witnessed people coming up to Richard and saying, hey, you know, hey, wow, I haven't seen you since you were on the whatever carrier. We have his scrapbook, which was about 3 inches thick, showing many, many pictures of his naval career.
You have the book?
No, we viewed it.
I see.
Getting into even schematics that he did as an electronics war specialist in that scrapbook. Pictures of his name on an airplane. I could go on and on.
All right.
So what you're looking at is you're looking at a gray area whereby the black and white world says he was not part of it. He says he's part of it, and the gray area is exactly the expression of reality. So, for instance, there was, I lost my train of thought, but there was the idea that the special agent told the prosecutor that Richard admitted that he was never a member of an active a reserve component of any branch of the U.S. military. And that he also told the U.S., it was told that the U.S. Attorney offices in New York do not prosecute stolen valor claims, and that it's consistent with the NCIS special agents that told him. Now, here's the problem. An intel friend went to the FBI and says, this particular person, Richard Thielman, went into a classified facility using ID that never existed. That's a crime. Does that concern you? And the FBI turned around and said, yes, it does. And we're not interested.
Okay.
So,
all right.
I get into the possibility of determining exactly what happened here.
Right. Okay. Let me jump over to Clay, then we're going to go back and spend some time with Robert. Clay, a question. Could this experience that was related to you in such detail by Rich, been changed to sound so unusual and odd, as it does in ways, in an effort to misdirect in any way or cover up a bigger story or a different story that needed protecting. He took a path that was very easily dismissible as being crazy and unusual to cover something up that would be more mainstream and maybe even bigger and more threatening. I'm just asking, is this a possibility?
There's always a possibility of manipulation. I remember when Rich came back from his first mission, I said, hey, how do you know you weren't put in a mind control program?
Sure.
And he said, it's an excellent question. And he said, it's in so many words, well, they've got a funny way of showing it, and that's when I saw the scar in his chest. That's one. Two, when he came back from his last off-world mission, he was incredibly bloated and blocky, called the Charlie Brown effect that astronauts experience when they've been up in space under zero G. And this guy does not put on weight. And I see him eat and drink like a horse, and he does not put on weight like that. After 2 months, he watches his diet, and he's a very lean man. So when I saw him, his face was puffy and arms and a lot of things. I couldn't believe it. It was very apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Also, his knees gave way. He had to wear a leg brace after the last mission. That was the last mission, which was the second off-world mission. That's one. Another thing happened, and I'm just giving you a 45 because I can go into all these elements. The fact he couldn't taste anything whatsoever for about 2.5-3 months. The only thing he could taste was apple cider. I think Sean tasted a little bit of that at one point.
Hard cider beer.
Yeah, hard cider beer. So, and I'm being facetious with that, but Sean, just kidding him. But the other thing is that he lost three team members after everything was said and done. And I won't mention names, but there was a Navy corpsman with us. And because Rich is Navy, folks, I don't care what anybody says, you can't go into a Naval Order or Navy League meeting. And Bob Morningstar will attest to this. He'll tell you about his experience when Rich was in the Naval Commanders meeting, which is about a month after my meeting, going to the Navy League meeting. Bob will tell you about that. But you can't BS these guys. They can ask you where you've been, what hooch you've been to, what mama-thon you've seen, everything. You just can't get around it. What carrier, who was there, you can't get around it. They'll pick up a fraud in a heartbeat.
All right.
The other thing, the other thing is that he lost three team members. Okay, and this is important. One of those team members, the female, ended up committing suicide. And I was with, Sean and I were with him. The day he got a call, and I think it's fair to say Division 5 of the FBI, whereby he had to go and explain to him what had happened to her. She was under quite a bit of duress. The mission took a toll on her. That was the first off-world. And she never made it to the other missions, from what I understand. Not the last off-world.
Who horribly interrogated her?
Well, let me get to that, guys. Yeah, that was, yes. So she ended up committing suicide. It was too much for her. The second team member to die, actually, he might have been the first one to die. He was T-boned in an intersection out west by an illegal, which really bothered the security. They call them meds, too, by the way, folks, that this particular subject of the mission was killed. And the third, Matt, the Marine, after the last off-world mission, evidently he put too much weight on. And his heart could sustain the 1G after coming back to terra firma. He passed away. That's three team members. And those three team members weighed heavily on the commanding officer, Richard. And I'm not ashamed to say this, but not in front of me because I'm not military. And probably if Bob was there, he would have expressed it to Bob Morningstar. But at this particular meeting, he's met with the Navy corpsman, and the Navy corpsman offered him comfort and solace. And as he said to me, the Navy corpsman, that Rich broke down in tears. He said, I lost three team members. Now, you know, at the end of the day, folks, when you're hit with the preponderance of evidence and the human quality, and you don't have the actual classified information, you weren't there. But as I said to you, Jeff, in the previous interview, spending 6 and 10 years, especially two of those, every other day, practically meeting, talking, emailing, talking. It's just, how do you make it up? How do you make it up?
I couldn't. Oh, I hear you. All right. Let me go back. Okay, go ahead, finish. I'm going to go back to Robert now.
No. So I was just going to say, you know, at the end of the day, what did he get out of it? But pain and heartache. He got nothing out of it.
Didn't sound like it. No.
Nope, he didn't.
Yeah. All right. Robert.
Yes.
Bob. Tell us your story here. We want to hear it. This, I don't want to prejudice anything or direct you. You tell us what, you know what we need to hear. You're
okay,
a pro. First, you go ahead.
First, I'd like to tell you how I met Clan Sean very briefly. There was a very seminal conference, UFO conference here in New York, down in the East Village, called the Culture of Contact UFO Conference. And I attended it as editor of UFO Digest, and I was listening to the other presenters, including William Burns of UFO Hunters and several others. You know? And then Clay and Sean got on the stage, and they started talking about SOM 1-01. And they had it in their hands, and they were. And I've been aware of it for 10 years, but I had never seen a complete copy of it. So I was fascinated. So when they finished, I went up to them and I said, hey, fellas, can I take a look at that? And I thumbed through it and it had all the pages that I had seen that had been released through Robert Wood and the Majestic Documents. But that copy had been mimeographed and had folded of bent pages, which distorted the text.
Uh-huh.
This was pristine. This was right off the press. So we decided to meet again, and we got to know each other. And then in, you recall, there was the Chicago O'Hare incident, which was a tremendous event. That seemed to spark something major, a major change in the UFO disclosure initiative. And so in February, I believe, 2008, and this was after the Stephenville sightings of UFOs near the that flew toward the Bush Texas White House.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to bring people up to date as to what was happening. These were amazing events being reported by the mass media. Larry King had the witnesses, et cetera, et cetera. So Clay and I and Sean had become very good friends, and then they called me and said, Bob, we want to talk to you. We have something really big coming up. So they called me down and told me that there was something happening at the United Nations and that there was an opportunity to bring forward UFO disclosure through the United Nations, through a United States Navy initiative. And that the reason that this initiative was being taken was that for the first time in history, U.S. Navy men, admirals, were in charge of the three major military positions in the Pentagon, being chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, director of national intelligence, and commander-in-chief of the Central Command.
Right.
And so as a result of these three men having that power, I believe it was for about 9 to 10 months before the rollover transition started, they felt that they had that opportunity because they were in charge and they had the say and nobody could contravene their orders. They initiated this movement to try to prod the United Nations to take up the issue, because the United Nations had already taken up the issue in 1978, as a result of the experience of the Prime Minister of Grenada, Sir Edward Geary, and he had petitioned the United States for a hearing in the General Assembly. I think it came up with UNGA 433. That's the UN General Assembly Resolution 433 to investigate UFOs. And a friend of mine named Thomas Reed, as well as Jacques Vallée and Stanton Friedman, were involved in that meeting, in that initiative, which began to take the subject seriously with a committee. However, that was thwarted with the overthrow of Sir Edmund Geary in Grenada and the takeover. And you know what else happened there.
Yeah.
Just on a side note, the reason that happened, the reason Geary was in the United Nations petitioning for UFO disclosure was that some fishermen in Grenada had come upon an alien body that had washed up on the shore holding a box. He was summoned to the shore to inspect it, and they found a six-fingered alien and a six-toed, six-fingered alien that had a box. And then when they opened the box, it had certain types of tropical fish that had never been seen before. They were new species. And so they hypothesized that they were experimenting in seeding or fish farming, you might say,
yeah,
on the coast of Grenada. So then the revolution came down, and the United States invaded to, quote-unquote, save the medical students and take the medical school. Well, it turns out that that was a cover story, because the medical students didn't need rescuing. What needed rescuing was the body of the alien that was being flash-frozen down there in the university, the medical school. So
the medical school didn't want to give it up. Is that what
the medical school was just mum, you know? They were under the control of the United States government. They had
we
just
couldn't get that thing out of there without staging a real invasion?
That was part of it. The real invasion had two real reasons. That was an opportunity to get the body. Because Grenada is an independent country.
Sure.
But the reason was the building of a 7,000-foot runway, which was going to be a jump-off point for heavy-lifting civilian aircraft that were ferrying troops from Cuba to Grenada to Angola. That's when that whole African thing was happening. So that's the background. So then they tell me about this meeting that's supposed to happen February 12th, Tuesday, and I should be on standby because if it happened, they would let me know, and I was going to be one of two people to break the story. And so I waited, and then the story, you know, the message came, hey, the meeting took place.
Right.
And then they gave me the information. I wrote up an article about it and put the word out, and that's what got the ball rolling. Now, what happened to me was very interesting. I have contacts in the United Nations among people who work there. I know the ambassador for outer space affairs and the chairman of the Committee for Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, and I met them as a result of this. This led to me being introduced to them. I was contacted by my contact at the UN. And after I released the story, she went to the UN that day, work day, which was the Wednesday, the 13th, and then the 14th, and she wrote back to me, there's a real buzz at the United Nations. Something's happened. Everybody, it's like electricity in the air. Okay, and so we knew that this was what it was about. Everybody was keeping mum, but everybody knew what it was about. So then we let out that story, that the meeting had been attended by all these dignitaries, including a representative of the Vatican. And as I said, I put up the photographs of these people. And a French reporter with a very high standing in the defense intelligence community in France named Gilles Laurent confirmed for us that the meeting from his end in France, he found out what had transpired through other sources. So he confirmed it. But then he suffered an attack in France that was tantamount to what Richard went through here after the sabotage. So Gilles Laurent had to suffer a lot of attacks in the press, in the media, because he had confirmed that this meeting had occurred. And that's how it was going. And it was moving along until the counter-disclosure element. The trolls on the internet began to attack, question everything. You know, snarky remarks, flame wars, attacking Clay and Sean.
Right, right.
And so on. You know that part of the story. But let me say this, going back to what Clay and Sean said. I saw that book. It's not a scrapbook. That's too low a word for it. It is a very, very large leather book for photographs with multiple pages. And I saw his career revealed to me in those pages. And I saw the aircraft carriers on which he served, the jet aircraft, with his name on the side.
That usually signifies the commanding officer flying that plane.
Exactly. The co-pilot doesn't get his name generally. It's tagged on the jet. There were, let me just put it tactfully, there were secret weapons in the photographs that I recognized that could not be taken by anyone except someone who was cleared. And then he showed me his ID. Now, one of the covers for his Navy identity was that he was a diplomat. He was assigned a status as a diplomat and issued State Department credentials. But the other thing that impressed me most, Jeff, is this. I have seen two of the ID cards that are used to enter Area 51. And it's a very unique ID card. It doesn't have your picture on it. It is an aluminum, card that has your thumbprint, it has a barcode, and it has a color code. And I've seen two of them in my life. And Rich was one of the people that had one of those.
Hmm.
So there's no doubt in my mind that Rich was legit. I've heard in detail about the off-world experiences. He was questioned by very qualified doctors, a very qualified doctor, and when I say qualified is that he was at one time part of the deep state, and he was told the story, and he was shown the surgical scars.
Right.
And so on and so forth. So I believed it. And I stuck with them when a lot of others, as I said, several others were privileged to break the story and were let in. But as soon as the scandal, and that's what it was, they made a scandal of it, you know, they backed off and, you know.
Who do you think was behind creating the scandal to try to cloud the story and cover it up and drive it into the chaos of silliness?
Well, there were two stooges whose name I'm not going to mention, two stooges and their stooge website,
mm-hmm.
and they were used by the counter-disclosure movement. So who is counter-disclosure? As I've said on your show and countless other shows, since 1947, the United States Navy has been trying to tell the people the truth. That is why James Forrestal died. That's why they threw him out the window.
Yeah.
At the Naval Hospital.
Right.
Admiral Hillenkotter, in 1961, Admiral Hillenkotter brought forth the phrase, flying saucers, serious business.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Air Force, it's serious business, and they're shutting up their airmen. Major Philip Kehoe, Sidney Storch, all these Navy guys, you know, because the Navy, unlike the Army and the Air Force, which are land-bound and politician-surrounded, the Navy works in isolation. It's out at sea, you know. Its bases are far-flung. And they are dedicated to the U.S. Constitution in a manner that transcends, it transcends the way the others look at it. You know, the others are willing to compromise. They're willing to lie for national security. And if you fake national security reasons for something, you know, it dupes the agent who's willing to go along with the big lie. Case in point, all of the FBI agents that went with the big lie after the JFK assassination and worked in the cover-up. So, in this case, the Navy has continued, and I'm very proud. We kept going, and in this year, it happened. What do we have? Well, we have a partial disclosure, a peekaboo, right? What do we have? Well, UFOs are real. They're on
camera.
They're
definitely not from this planet, according to the captain.
David Fravers repeatedly says it's not from this world. We should be interested.
He made no bones about that. He said, I can tell it's not from this planet. So.
And notice that he's not ridiculed.
No.
He's not hassled.
No snicker factor in the news, nothing.
Right. Absolutely right. And so let me just read. Can I read you these three paragraphs?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So I was telling Richard Hoagland that we have been asked, and you are included, you, Jeff, were included too, to bring public pressure to bear on our political leaders to give the military orders officially to do what they need and want to do, i.e. stop lying to the American public and to disclose the reality of the alien presence to the nation and the world. The U.S. government is also under pressure from the aliens themselves, who have given it a timetable, 2013 for establishing diplomatic relations and 2017 for open contact before the world at large. If disclosure is not forthcoming, the alien presence will act unilaterally and force disclosure on their terms, which may take the form described by Arthur C. Clarke in Childhood's End, i.e. parking their flying saucers over capital cities around the world. It won't be like Independence Day, but an unmistakable sign that would be demonstrated over perhaps three other nations, for example, New Zealand, Brazil, and South Africa, or worse, Venezuela, North Korea, or another third world nation like Uganda. I told our diplomat that such an action on the part of the coming race would demote the U.S. in stature, diminish our credibility and prestige in the eyes of the world, while elevating the international status and prestige of whichever country they chose for this demonstration. Our diplomat expressed the undesirable prospects of watching Hugo Chavez of Venezuela or Kim Jong-il at the time of North Korea delightedly welcoming alien ships over Caracas or Pyongyang and boasting on the world stage live on CNN, using the event as proof of their superiority of their regimes and so on. So I'll curtail it. You get the idea. So that was what this whole thing was about. And...
Well, Robert, where are we right now? Okay, we've had Fravor talking, making his statements, and they're remarkable. And as I've suggested, that he would never have made statements like that unless he was green-lighted to do it. We've got the video, which came from We're Not Sure. There is rumor that there are going to be other video releases.
Mm-hmm.
Why play the little peekaboo game? Why not just say, hey, all right, we've already established that. The statements have been made. Not of this planet, clearly not our intelligence in terms of technology. It's them. The word has been put out with the people, the sheep have been told, right?
Mm. Yes.
The media reported it, but nothing much has changed.
Oh, this is operating more on a subliminal psychological level. This is the intention.
Hasn't that been going on, Robert, though, and all?
Sure.
Due respect, since the 1950s with Hollywood's movies.
But this is the point, yes. I mentioned the phrase flying saucer serious business. That was Frank Edwards, who wrote the book based on the statement by Admiral Hillenkoetter.
Right.
Now, in 1965, I saw Frank Edwards with Alan Burke in New York City on Channel 5 News, and he said that the CIA had a seven-phase, seven-year plan, seven times seven, to acclimatize the American and world public to the reality of UFO presence, but that it had to be done very gradually.
Uh-huh.
And that whereas in the 1950s, all the sci-fi was about monsters from outer space, he said, within a couple of years, you're going to see a more friendly version of extraterrestrials.
That's Spielberg.
Yeah, and he predicted Spielberg. He said these words. He said, you are going to see a kind of movie, a kind of film such as has never been seen before, with a technology that is beyond anything that we have today. And that's a perfect description of what we saw with Star Wars, Encounters of the Third Kind, and so on and so forth. But he said it was seven phases of 7 years. So add 50 to 1965, we get 2015. Minus one, it's 2014, and that's when all of this extra UFO activity started to happen around the world. People with their iPhones and their high-resolution cameras catching them everywhere. This was part of what they predicted. They promised us, if you don't tell the people about this, we are going to have open manifestations of UFO overflights over all the countries.
Or the day the Earth stood still. I got to park one.
Park one, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they have parked. Didn't they park it? Didn't they park it 15 minutes over Chicago O'Hare?
They parked a lot of them, yeah. Now, the O'Hare story was huge, and that story was not touched for several months until Peter Davenport pushed it. And then on this program, we rolled it out. And right. The transportation director or editor of the Chicago Tribune is the guy who released the story after getting all this stuff. Hell, we had one of the Boeing pilots on this program for an hour describing how he was taxiing a plane across the runway for maintenance. And he watched the whole thing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, yeah, John Helkovich came out with that story. And
Helkovich did not acquit himself well.
He released it to the Chicago Tribune, and that's where it went viral. I mean, you brought it out, but it finally got to him. Anyway, the point is this. The government woke up when the Chicago Tribune put that story out. They got more hits on that story than any other story in history. They got 1.5 million hits on the day it happened. And I think that signaled to the government that the people were ready to receive more information and more disclosure.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting you would say the people are ready. That can be really, I think, dissected. They're ready in several ways. One of which is the sheep are always ready. Yawn, keep their heads down and keep chewing. Two, those who have been aware of the phenomenon would just say, oh, okay, that's fine. We knew it. No big deal. And then there's that middle group that says, gosh, really? We're really not alone? And then they have to confront the fact that the government's been lying to them for the last 60 years or more, 70 years. So there's an issue for the government to deal with there, but they've got their plausible deniability because all those people are dead.
That's true.
They inherited it.
But they also have laws to exculpate themselves.
Oh, they're never going to be held accountable. We know that.
Right. But, you know, actually, the liability factor, first the lying to the public openly for 70 years, that discredits their statements on anything else. But the liability for such things as allowing aliens to abduct human beings. And
absolutely.
Experiments, the cattle mutilations, though that may be a wrong term, the cattle genetic experiments that they've been conducting, and those cattle owners, you know, who've been told, oh, yeah, that's predators, and the government has allowed that to happen. I think all of that would be...
That is potentially litigious when you think about someone being abducted with, quote, permission at some level of the government or the military and the government. And abduction, as you know, Robert, and most of you listening know, can be an horrific emotional event that destroys people's lives. It literally can.
And their bodies. The body is
absolutely
insulted. It's abused. And, you know, very often they have the technology not to erase your memory, but they apply a drug or a force that prevents the memory from being registered in your conscious memory.
It's screened out. The
insult to the body is so great that the body informs the conscious mind of what has happened, and eventually the memory erupts from a neuromuscular origin of memory, not from your general
Said. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very good.
You asked me where we stand. I think what's happening, and this is very important, and John Rappaport, who invented the word fake news, he has no more fake news.
John was amazing. I don't know how many years ago he came up with that name. 15 something.
I know. So I always make a point to give credit to John, because they think that President Trump did it. Anyway, he said it's very important not to let the government seize the narrative. Just because they've, you know, lifted the curtain, given us a peekaboo view, let's not let them come on and say this is it with the next series of revelations, that this is the only way, the only story. Hundreds, thousands of UFO researchers for 70 years have done really great work and have arrived at a very coherent and consistent,
right,
accurate.
It's all coalesced perfectly,
right.
And because the facts are the facts, and
right,
yeah,
right,
exactly. All right,
Something's happening. The danger is that an alien menace is going to be used as a reason for nuclear arms in outer space, or even higher tech weapons.
Oh, I think they're already there, and they're building like crazy right now for exactly that. Remember Kissinger's statement in the early 70s about how people would run to the government and give up all their liberty for protection from an off-planet threat? I'm paraphrasing him, but that's what he said.
Yes.
And that card is probably going to be played, and we won't have much of a chance to really figure it out. We as a collective humanity, we and this group, and many of you listening, will probably have a pretty good idea that we're being played. It'll happen.
I would disagree only insofar as when Kissinger said it, I believe he believed it. I just think there's much more sophistication and even cynicism in place, where I don't think people would bite that way.
Mm-hmm. But there is no doubt that there is contention over the Earth, its people, and its resources by rival alien entities, and that something is up.
Yeah, I would let me say something to dovetail with what Sean said, and it's a little of a conflict, but I'm not so convinced that humanity is really as mature as we'd like to think it is. Even after all this exposure, look what happened, Robert, in Southern California with that obvious missile launch off Vandenberg. Twitter went crazy. People were saying, is ET, are they UFOs, are we being invaded? And there were panic messages.
Yes. But I think the general populace is not going to panic.
No, the general populace, I think, is going to just accept it, yawn.
You know, here's very interesting. You know, this disclosure just happened. We just had this incident in Hawaii with the quote-unquote error alarm. I think something really went down. But if you look at the movie Battleship, which came out in, 2012, a totally U.S. Navy co-sponsored production, where the U.S. Navy saves the day, the USS John Paul Jones stops an an alien invasion that's centered on Hawaii. I think that they have been warning us, and I have been privy to information from Hawaii for over a year and a half that says that there has been an ongoing UFO war off the coast of Hawaii, and that the military has been in terror because the poor servicemen have to go on the base where they are on full alert, because this thing is an ongoing event. And then they have to go out into Honolulu and pretend that there's nothing wrong and everything's right with the world. It creates a lot of stress. But I am very suspicious of the explanation that they gave of the error, because the Navy base went into alert 2 minutes before that signal went out to the people.
Hold on a sec. The Dick Allgaier was on the program, he brought with him the actual, it's like a manual, but it's a visual chart that the operator of that alarm system has to follow in order to actually enter the command that the signal of warning be passed out on the system all over the state. It wasn't just one button mispushed. There was a whole sequence of events that had to be protocol followed and then executed to get that alarm to go out. So that's the bottom line. All right, Clay, I think you were on there.
That's Sean.
Sean.
Clay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to offer. Bob, at some point, tell the story about the Coast Guard commander who had to deal with the UFO off of Long Island, and our source had to deal with
this. This is a very, very interesting thing. There's the U.S. Coast Guard's always doing training, and you have to qualify and requalify so that they stay in tip-top shape. So there were two boats off Fire Island that were doing a nighttime qualifications, boat crew qualifications. And this, so this involves practicing towing a boat that's disabled. This is very complex procedure with lines and rope. It's very technical. It's not, you just don't tie a rope and start hauling the boat. You have to tow it from behind, then you have to go to the side and bring them together. So while they were going from the stern tow to the side tow condition, in which the boat with power has to come around, align itself sideways with the distressed vessel, and then close the distance between them so they can tie the spring line and the aft line and different what regular people call ropes to secure the vessel. As they were in that condition, separated but aligned with each other, a huge, brilliant UFO shot out of the water between the two boats and shot into the sky, terrorized both crews. It ended the mission. It was canceled. They had to hightail it back to shore. And then the crews of the two vessels were taken to Northport, Long Island, where they were being debriefed. And our friend Rich was called in, and he raced out there. And he found a group of CIA types browbeating and coercing the men. You know, the regular story. Can't tell anybody about this. This never happened. That, you know, and, you know.
Threats, menacing. Intimidation, got it.
Threats, intimidation, menacing. And Rich arrived there, and he really took umbrage at it, and he dressed down the government agent that was doing that. And he had, you know, on behalf of all the servicemen, they do the work, they do the service, and you have no right to come in here. This is not your place. This is not your office. You are not in command here, and you will not treat these men this way.
He must have had some rank to pull to get in there close enough to even talk to these people.
Well, yep, he was a commander. He was the rank, the boards that he wore were a full commander.
Uh-huh.
But it takes more than that, you know.
I can share this with you guys. Yeah, yeah. Rich told us about it. He told us the day before. He said, "I got to go out and so-and-so and debrief this particular officer and about the incident." And he told me what I remember is he spent 90 minutes with this officer debriefing him and giving him the 45 of what's going on. And clearly, this officer was like a deer in the headlights. I had since, I know the officer's name, who was out on surf patrols. Rob, you did a great job explaining that. I've tried to get in contact with him. I have his name. I've sent him emails and through Facebook, and no response. I'm hoping one of these days that that he might get a chance to respond back. But yeah, he gave him the what Rich said. I gave him the sine wave. I explained exactly what was going on and what was going on, what was happening in terms of what's out there. And yeah. And they were, the biggest concern was if there was any pics, any of the crew members took any pictures, and that they went out to New Haven, if you remember that too, Bob. So it was interesting side note to our guys.
Yes, there's one more point. When he, you know, I just didn't take it all. I asked a lot of questions, and so I said to him, what was the commander's name of the base where you were? And he gave me the name, and I followed up, and it was, you know. So someone couldn't make up all a story like this, you know, out of whole cloth and overnight or in 2 days. There was substance to every aspect of it that he gave.
You know, we're just about out of time this hour. You want to stay on a little bit in the second hour?
Oh, sure. I'd love to listen to.
All right. What we're going to do is get into something a little bit different, and I wanted to ask all of you real quickly before we go to break. What is your relationship with Michael Sala on this issue, and how do you view it? We're going to talk about that and more in the next hour. So very quickly, Sean and Clay, your relationship with Mike?
Clay?
Okay, I'll speak first. I was, well, just remind me, though, that before we leave the air, I want to read a letter to you. You guys, okay? And Bob, you're not aware of this letter because we've had to keep it quiet. So, and that's no slight to you, my friend, but it's something we've had to do. So,
all right, very
just
good.
Remind me, Jeff.
We'll do that.
I read the letter.
We will do
okay.
that.
Okay. I think Mike is a very good man. I think that Mike was a little bit naive about trying to penetrate the national security state and how failsafe works. I find him a very meticulous. And in a very, very good analyst. I don't agree with everything Mike has said, but I know his heart is in a good place. And Mike, I don't disagree with Mike when he said I won't lie and say that Rich and Bella's CU went sorry when they were trying to turn fail-safe off. Sean and I understood, and we would not lie, so we said no comment to that issue. And at the end of the day, what people have to understand is that the military has learned over the years, they are quite good at learning from their mistakes. So when you get into failsafe, they have contingency upon contingency to be able to keep the secrets. And there's nothing going to crack that. So no matter what Mike did, no matter what any researcher did out there, it was a done deal. Everything was about
all right.
Disavowal.
Well, what and I've got, it, we've got to wrap it.
One very quick thing.
Go ahead, real quick.
What Michael did was the typical Chinese finger cylinder. The more you pull, the more you get stuck.
Okay.
The harder you went after Rich, the deeper failsafe went in.
All right, I got it. Okay, we're going to come back and try and tie this up by taking care of the controversial end of the story as much as we can in the time limited tonight. So stay tuned, and we shall continue right after this.